Good morning. Greetings in Jesus' name. Welcome to each one. We trust that God will be glorified by our worship today. The title of the message is, Now Am I Grown Up? Whether we are a young child or a youth or an adult, we're always looking for the next step, always looking for the next goal to be reached. And if you think about a small baby, we all want to hold a little baby and we want to examine their perfect little features and exclaim how perfect they are, and yet they can't feed themselves, they can't sit up, they can't even follow an object with their eyes. And the day they take the first step, we're all excited and want them to do it over, and we want them to move on to the next thing. So then why don't we exclaim over the same thing when a 12-year-old takes a step? Well, it has to do with maturity or growth. And if you look up mature in the dictionary, it simply says having completed the natural growth stage. So it very much depends where you are in life as to whether you're mature or not, or whether you've completed the natural growth stage. Are you still toddling around like a little toddler carrying your bottle when you should be eating adult food? Paul talked about that to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 3. He said he was feeding them milk because they couldn't handle meat. He said, you're like babes in Christ when you should be adults in Christ. And he knew that they couldn't handle adult food. Well, we have a family friend who loves ranch. And one time he was at our house and he was holding one of our several week-old babies and gave a taste of that ranch on his finger. And that little girl spent a bit of the night crying and needed some grape water and all that. But now she can handle ranch dressing just fine. What changed? Well, she grew up and was able to handle it. This title kind of came from this little golden jewel book. I remember as a very small boy reading this and loving the pictures, and I didn't really think much about the story. But I would like to read some out of this and then look at Joseph's life in the Bible as an example of growth and maturity. So this book is called Little Cottontail, and it goes like this. Once there was a little cottontail rabbit who lived in a cozy nest. Mother, said the little cottontail, when will I grow up? Soon, said his mother. But first, little cottontail, you must leave the nest. Leave the nest, he said. His little nest was just the right size. It was soft and warm, with a bed made of grass and tufts of fur. It was a nice nest. But with a flop and a hop and a hump and a bump, little cottontail left the nest. Now am I grown up? He asked. No, said his mother, not yet. She said, first, little cottontail, you must learn to wash yourself. Please teach me, he said. Watch closely, said his mother. This is the way you wash yourself early in the morning. Shake your feet one at a time, then lick them clean one at a time. Scrub your face. Scratch your ears with your big hind paws. Then fluff up your fur and lick it clean. I can do all that, said little cottontail, and he did. Now am I grown up? Asked little cottontail. Not yet, said his mother. first, little cottontail, you must learn what big rabbits eat. Out in the meadow all summer long, they eat grass and herbs and lots of green plants. Over by the farmhouse all summer long, they eat carrots and cabbage and nice fresh fruit. All through the winter, white with snow, they eat bugs, buds and twigs and the bark of trees. These are things that big rabbits eat whenever they are hungry. Little Cottontail said, I listen closely and I think I know them. And he did. Now am I grown up? Asked Little Cottontail. Not yet, hissed a woodchuck, popping from his burrow. First you must learn about foxes. What about foxes? Said Little Cottontail. Foxes like to chase rabbits, said his mother. They like to catch them for dinner. You must learn how to tell that a fox is coming. Please, Little Cottontail, watch very closely. This is the way you twitch your nose. Sniff, 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 sniff. To sniff the air for the smell of a fox. And this is the way you cock your ears and raise your head and glance about to see if the fox is coming. And if the fox comes, this is the way you lay back your ears and bound away. This is the way you hop, hop as fast as you can before the fox can catch you. You dodge and you twist and you take shortcuts. You zigzag and circle and double back on your tracks. You lead the fox to a briar patch. You do a quick stop here and hop to the side. You freeze like a statue and the fox runs right by. And all the fox does is catch a pawful of thorns in the briar patch. That's so much to learn, said Little Cottontail, though I did listen closely. Now let me see. What came first? Oh, yes. First, I twitched my nose. So Little Cottontail twitched his nose to sniff the air for the smell of a fox. Then he cocked his ears and glanced about. Mother, cried Little Cottontail, a fox is coming. Little Cottontail and his mother laid back their ears and bounded away, and the fox chased after them. Oh dear, thought the mother, what if Little Cottontail doesn't remember all I told him? But Little Cottontail zigzagged and circled and doubled back on his tracks. And then he came to a quick stop and hopped to the side. He froze like a statue, and the fox ran by straight into a briar patch. Mother, said Little Cottontail, gasping for breath, now am I grown up? Yes, said his mother, now you are grown up, Big Cottontail. Now, life isn't quite that simple for us, but there's some good lessons that I'd like to pull out from this and think about as we go through this. I don't know how God designed animals to think and teach their young, but there's definitely things they learn from their parents and from watching and observing. And there's a couple things this little rabbit said to his mother that stand out. Of course, one was, when will I be grown up? He had the desire to be big or to move on with life. So that's a first simple step, is a desire to mature or move on. One of the key things that this little cottontail said was, when he didn't know how to wash himself, he simply said, please teach me. And it's a lot easier to learn, no matter what age we are, and it's a lot easier for those teaching to teach if we all have that attitude. Please teach me. Show me. I want to learn. And another thing this little rabbit said was, I can do all that. And he did. So he listened closely, and then he tried it and did it. And another question was, what about foxes? Or he asked, what about these dangers? What do I need to know about it? And as the story goes, he figured it out. So think about that as we go through. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 37, and I would like to study out the story of Joseph as an example of a young man who was mature. It's the first of anything we are given about Joseph is in Genesis chapter 37, verse 2. It says, "These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. And he brought an evil report home." So we're not going to read near all these verses about Joseph. We're going to go through his life here in Egypt and pick out some of the things that stand out, and then go back over and make it more practical for us. In this account, in verse 5 through 11, he had these two different dreams, and he told his brothers about them. And it would appear like he was maybe this innocent, kind of naive, open-faced, honest boy, and maybe said more than he should have to his brothers in the situation they were in there. And it made his brothers very upset and jealous of him. In verse 18 through 37, his brothers figured out what they were going to do about this. They just wanted to get him out of their lives. And Joseph, as a 17-year-old boy, was sold by his brothers to be a slave into Egypt. And it shows no signs of resistance or pushback. And I'm sure his brothers thought, well, actually, I think they said, then see what comes of his dreams. In chapter 39, verse 1 through 6, Joseph was brought to Egypt, and he was sold to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh. So we're going to read verses 2 through 6, Genesis 39, verse 2 through 6. "And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him. And he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house, and all over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not all that he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored." So Joseph was put into a management position very soon after he was brought into Egypt. And so in this very strange, likely very unfamiliar culture, and he was probably less than 20 years old when this happened. And then in chapter 39 here, verse 7 through 19, Joseph's wife, Potiphar's wife tempted Joseph and tried to seduce him. And here's what he said to her in verse 9. He said, "How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And it wasn't just this one time that she tempted him. It says in verse 10, day after day she would speak to him about it, and he would not hearken to her. And he took it a step further, and he said, "I'm not even going to be around her." So as with in the past, as with his brothers, because of his life of integrity and him refusing to stoop to evil sin, he was thrown into prison. So not only was he a slave, now he's a slave thrown into prison. And in verse 21, in chapter 39, here's here's 20 and 21, here's what it says. Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And then verse 23, it says, because the Lord was with him and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. Very soon again, he rose to management position, now in prison. In chapter 40, verses 6 and 7, he's in prison there, and he noticed these other men that were very sad. And I think that's outstanding. Here's this single young man. Because of his godly life, he was sold as a slave into a foreign land. Now, because he stood for right in the foreign land, he was thrown into prison. And instead of just moping in a corner, he saw some other people in need, and he was ministering to these other prisoners. Verse 14 and 15, he said, think on me. He made a request when these other men got out, the butler and baker got out of prison. He said, hey, remind Pharaoh that I'm in here and I shouldn't be. And I think that is noteworthy that he was real with his situation and he left them know his desire to be released. But in chapter 41, verse 1, he was there two more years and he had been completely forgotten about. But things are about to change here. In 41, verse 14, it says, Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. And he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh. It shows no signs of depression or self-pity. And in verse 15, Pharaoh said, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard of thee that thou canst understand to interpret dreams. And what did Joseph say? Did he say, yeah, I've been known to do that? No, he said, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Now turn over to verse 37, chapter 41. Joseph is made ruler here. Joseph told about what was going to happen with, they were going to have 7 good years and then 7 bad years is what this dream meant. And Joseph said, here's what you need to do. In the good years, you need to just stock up for the bad years, and then you'll have plenty to get you through. And so Pharaoh said, well, in verse 38, can we find such a one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou. Thou shalt be over my house. So here he is, fresh out of prison, and again put into a position to take charge of this situation. Because I believe the key is in, verse 38, in whom the Spirit of God is. Pharaoh, in this one conversation, first time he met Joseph, as far as we know, he said, this is a man with the Spirit of God. In chapter 42, this is when the famine is going on. Joseph's brothers come down from Canaan to buy corn. And he remembered his own dream about them. It would seem like he was about 30 years old when he got out of prison. So there were 7 good years and probably several years into the bad years now had passed. So let's say 10 years had passed. He was likely around 40 years old at this point. So this would have been like 20-some years since he was sold. And it would appear like maybe he learned something about not immediately telling his brothers everything he knew. They came and he recognized them, and he decided not to just point it out right now or do something about it. In chapter 43, he wisely put his brothers to the test and checked out to see if they had learned anything in those 20 years. In chapter 45, then, after he had tested them, he just couldn't hold himself back. And he was overcome with emotion here, and he finally just told them who he was. And, of course, they became very fearful. But in verse 5 through 8, again, some key verses in what Joseph's character was like. In 45, 5 through 8, it says, "Now therefore," this is Joseph talking to his brothers, "Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt." So he gave God full credit for him being there and providing for the land through this famine. Then over in chapter 50, in verse 15 through 21 in chapter 50, these brothers suddenly became fearful because their father had died, and they were afraid that now Joseph would repay them the evil that they had done to him. And what does he do but in verse 19? "Joseph said unto them, Fear not, for am I in the place of God?" He simply said, "I'm going to leave that between you and God. It's not for me to do this." In verse 20, "But as for you, you thought it evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass as it is this day to save much people alive." And then one more thing about his life here in 22, verse 22 through the end, is on his deathbed, he asked for his bones to be carried to the promised land. And he could have rightfully set up a memorial there in Egypt. And, you know, he was the hero that had saved the land with this famine. And instead, he wanted to be carried with his people to the promised land. So what can we learn from some of these things about Joseph's life? And there's plenty more than I have pointed out, but I'll just go down through with some of them. The first one I have is he had a good relationship with his father. And I believe that gave him this complete surrender and lifelong trust in the providence of God. And as fathers, our relationship with our children directly affects their view of God. I am more and more impressed with that thought, and it can sometimes feel overwhelming because that puts a lot of responsibility on us. So what are you doing today to set that course? Your children, our children, will view God by how we relate to them. Now, what was Joseph's part in this? I think his secret was simply that you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. That attitude from his life helped him. Obviously, Joseph's home situation was less than ideal. If you do any studying into it, he had three stepmothers or his father and the concubines and the sons and some of the family divisions. It was not a perfect situation. But I believe he looked at life and he said, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good, or there's good can come out of less than ideal situations. He made some simple choices to look to God in whatever he faced. The next one is he accepted his lot in life. He refused to fall victim to his circumstances or fall in the victim mentality trap. He had a right, as much as anybody, to think that life just isn't fair. And the fact is, life isn't fair. If it was fair, you wouldn't or shouldn't be here today. There are people that have it a lot worse than you. Most times when we say life isn't fair, it's because we're implying that we deserve more than we're getting. The next one is he made the best of every situation he faced. He accepted what he was asked to do. When he was asked to manage Potiphar's house, he did it. And that was when he was 20 years old. When he was manager in prison, he did it. When he was asked to coordinate the supply of food and divvy it out, he did it. And it seems like he did it wholeheartedly. Here's a quote. Maturity does not come with age. It comes with the acceptance of responsibility. Are you sitting down inside? I'm sorry, are you sitting down but still standing up inside when you're asked to do something? There's nothing like being asked to be responsible for something that you don't want to do or don't feel adequate or whatever to help you grow up. Here's another quote. The moment you take responsibility for everything in your life is the moment that you can change anything in your life. And that may be an overstatement, but I think you get the point of that. The moment you take responsibility for everything in your life is the moment that you can change anything in your life. The next one is simply he noticed things that needed done without being told. In 1 Corinthians 14, verse 20, it says, brethren, be not children in understanding, howbeit in malice be ye children, but in understanding be men. I think that's one of the first signs of maturity, is when we can notice what needs done without being told. The next one is he didn't allow anyone to despise his youth. Let's turn to 1 Timothy chapter 4 and read these verses. 1 Timothy chapter 4. First Timothy 4, 12 through 16. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Till I come, give attendance to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Neglect not the gift that is in thee, which was given thee by prophecy, with the laying on of the hands of the presbytery. Meditate upon these things. Give thyself wholly to them, that thy profiting may appear to all. Take heed unto thyself and unto the doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee. He didn't allow anyone to despise his youth. I'm guessing there were some people in the land of Egypt there when he was 20 years old and 30 years old, and he had some of these positions that wanted to despise how young he was. Here's something out of a book I'll read. It says, it doesn't matter how young or old you are, spiritual maturity is not measured by age. Age has little to do with conviction. Rather, spiritual maturity is developed one day at a time. We measure our maturity by how well we daily apply our faith. Obedience to Bible commands is the mark of maturity. The next one I have is, he understood cause and effect. And this one takes wisdom as parents or relating to other people. Takes wisdom to know how far to take this, at what point, like in a child's life or as someone is growing and maturing. But I believe it's one of the most effective tools that we can give our children to help them mature and grow in life is when they can understand cause and effect. If I do this, this will happen. If I don't do this, this will happen or won't happen. And to help them feel the pain, the consequences, the blessings of their choices. And again, we can't, children, there are some things they shouldn't be allowed to choose, but they need to understand cause and effect. And I believe most times children are more ready for this than we as adults think they are. They can catch on to things faster than we think they can a lot of times. There is reaping for what we sow. Galatians 6:8 says, if you sow to the flesh, you will reap of the flesh, corruption. If you sow to the Spirit, you will of the Spirit reap life. It used to be buy now and pay later. Then it was buy now. I got ahead of myself on one. It used to be buy now, pay now. If you needed something, you had to have a way to pay for it right then. Then it was buy now, pay later. And now it's buy now and someone else picks up the tab. But God's laws hasn't changed. It doesn't matter what standard society sets. God's law is still in place. If you buy a house in an HOA, homeowners association, don't gripe and complain about the rules of of living in that property. Or closer home for me is buy a farm in Mesa County. Don't complain about the building codes when it's time to build a chicken barn. You want a safe church to raise your family in and be in a godly environment, but God forbid that the same brotherhood should tell you how to raise your family, right? Do you understand cause and effect? Okay, another sign of his maturity was he knew how to say no. When faced with great temptation to sin with Potiphar's wife, he simply said no. He made no excuses and no exceptions for himself or his situation. Here's a quote. Have the courage to say no. Have the courage to face the truth. Do the right thing because it is right. These are the magic keys to living your life with integrity. So learn to say no to sin, but also learn to say no to opportunities. Or know when to stop. With children, sometimes it's, something might be funny the first time, and then it turns to be silly, and then the third time it's like, it's time for a spanking. And this can go on. We often think of that with children not knowing when to stop, but it can happen with us older people too. I remember when I was, I don't know how old I was, maybe 3 or 4, there was this man that would come and get oil from my dad. And I don't know, he just had this thing. I'm sure he was just trying to be this nice, friendly old man, but he would... You know, he wanted to take me home, you know, to be with, like, to be his boy. And I just was scared when he would come. And I think sometimes we think need to think about how we relate to little children or teasing or whatever, to know when to stop. Know how to say no. There's this thing in business. In Ranching for Profit, they have this thing that's called, they have it labeled WITB and WOTB. It is working in the business, and it's the WO is working on the business. And in the point with that was, here's what it said in this article. It said, the problem isn't working in the business. The problem is how easily working in the business consumes us. So the problem isn't having jobs or work or opportunities. The problem is letting it consume us. And you could put brotherhood for the bee or whatever you want, whatever good thing there is. We simply need to learn to prioritize and not let these things consume us. Learn to say no. That's what I'm trying to learn. The next one is, Joseph was not vindictive. There were numerous times in his life that he could easily have given others a taste of their own medicine. But he chose rather the way of peace. And in our Sunday school discussion, we talked about that forgiveness and the debt that we owe. And I think we need to think about that in the example of Joseph and how he looked at it. You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. How often do you say that when you've been slighted or hurt? Here's a quote, an immature Christian is hard to please and easy to offend. So there could be a lot more. Let's turn to Philippians 3 for some closing verses here about what perfect maturity looks like. Philippians chapter 3. Verses 7 through 15. So no matter if we're a young child or we're a young person or newly accepted Christ or an old person, whatever, this can be our testimony. Remember, maturity means having completed the natural growth cycle. So we don't expect a 15-year-old Christian to be as mature as a 30-year-old. But where are you in life and in your growth? So in Philippians chapter 3, verse 7 through 15, it says, but what things were gained to me, those I counted loss for Christ. Yea, doubtless, and I count all things but loss for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things, and do count them but dung that I may win Christ, and be found in him, not having mine own righteousness, which is of the law, but that which is through the faith of Christ, the righteousness which is of God by faith, that I may know him in the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being made conformable unto his death, if by any means I might attain unto the resurrection of the dead, not as though I had already attained, either were already perfect, but I follow after, if that I may apprehend that for which also I am apprehended of Christ. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind, and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Let us therefore, as many as be perfect, be thus minded. And if in anything you be otherwise minded, God shall reveal even this unto you. Please teach me.